Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and Apple Podcast. Big thanks to Kim Rupp and the International Motorsports Hall of Fame and Museum. Join us Saturday, August 1st for a night at the museum to benefit the International Motorsports Hall of Fame. Front entrance doors for the museum will open at 5 p.m. Dinner will be served at 6 p.m. and the racing memorabilia auction will start at 7 p.m. The band, Swinging Medallions, will start playing at 8:30, with items continuing to be auctioning off during the band's intermissions. Tickets are $75 each or $500 for table of eight. For more information, call 256-362-5002 or email Kim Rupp at MotorsportsHallOfFameFoundation.com.
Hey, this is Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to the Pit Stop with Tim Despain.
Good evening from Talladega, Alabama. You're in the Pit Stop, Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, home of the 2.66 mile, 33 degree bank monster we call Talladega Super Speedway. As Grant Lynch always says, this is more than a race. This is Talladega. We got a big show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Let's bring on our Reverend, Mr. Reverend Joe Bubblekill. Let's get everything going. Reverend Joe, come on in the Pit Stop. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, buddy. How you doing?
We're doing good. How you getting brown now after you had that little surgery you had a little bit earlier?
Well, I'm getting around a little better each day. I'll tell you what, physical therapy twice a week and then having exercise during the week, it gets a bit exhausting, but getting better and better. Hopefully maybe only a couple more weeks and I won't be back totally to normal, but I'm not sure I ever was normal, so I'm not going to worry too much about that.
That sounds good, Reverend. We've been praying for you, bud. You want to go ahead and crank everything up and let's get this show started.
Let's get this thing going. Lord, we come before you, and right off the bat, we want to thank you so much for protecting everyone the way you did at Daytona this past weekend. We appreciate that so, so much. And we know without your good hands watching over us, we would have had more problems. But we thank you so much for that, Lord, and we ask you to do that for us every day and every week. Watch over us, keep us safe, and guide us. Watch over all the racers this weekend. Please watch over all our soldiers all over the world and all of them folks all over the country that put on a uniform of any type to protect us. Watch over them and watch over their families. Be with us in every way tonight. Give us a great show.
Amen, Reverend Jeff. Reverend Joe, I say it every week. Great invocation, and just awesome job, bud. And let me give you a second to throw out there where everybody can follow you at on social media, your website, and all that. Reverend Joe, you got the floor, bud.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Folks can get a hold of me at ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. That's my email address. ontrackwithjesus.org is our website. And you can call me anytime at 951-232-7630. And we're always glad to hear from folks with questions or other such things and concerns on our website, on our Facebook page. I post scripture every morning and every evening. And please, we're glad to hear your questions, phone call with questions, anything we can do to help you in any way. And like I said earlier, I'm so thankful that Austin was okay the other night and everyone else was okay. Known Austin since he started. Good man and a good Christian. And if you notice, he thanked the Lord a dozen times every time they interviewed him. So let's all keep in mind that without God, we go nowhere.
Exactly right, Reverend. And I've had the privilege to talk to Austin a couple of times here at Talbot Super Speedway. He's a real class act, a real good gentleman, Reverend.
That he is, and a real good boy. And I've had the privilege of being friends with his grandfather, Richard, for many years. And when Austin first started driving trucks, he took me and Austin aside and he said, Rev, he always called me Padre. He said, Padre, anytime you're near my grandson, pray with him. And he turned to his grandson and he said, and you pay attention. And a couple weeks later, we were at Vegas, and Austin called me over to pray with him before he qualified. He put the truck on the pole, and then he called me over to pray with him before he got in the car, and he went out and won the race. And he thanked God for all of it. Not me. I have nothing to do with it, but it's an important thing to know that we don't do a thing without God's help.
Amen, Brother Joe. Thank you very much. You have a great night out there on the West Coast, which I know it's not raining, which we're going to be in a little dry a little here, too. I think we got Megan coming on here in a few minutes, going to talk about the weather forecast for Sparta, Kentucky up there. But Reverend Joe, thank you again very much for taking time out and being our official reverend for the Pit Stop.
You're my best season. To Megan, too.
Yes, sir, I will. Take care.
Take care.
We'll talk at you next
week. All right, see you,
buddy.
Talk to you next week. All right.
God bless you, too. Okay, that was our reverend for the show, Mr. Reverend Joe Bubico. At this time, we'll get my good friend, CEO, SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Let's bring him on, and let's get this party started again.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen, how you doing tonight, bud?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been able to make it back on the show with you guys. In Florida for a week and had to take a week off last week, but here I am again.
Stephen, we're glad to have you back. I mean, no problem when you have stuff you have to take care of. Last week, Stephen Conley filled in for you. He helped us out, and the week before that, Todd Bigsby helped out. Great show. Glad to have all the support to actually help us out whenever one of us has to be off. You know, I think it was a couple of years ago I had to be off when I was in Orlando.
What's that?
Sorry, Steve. I know you're busy, but hey, we've got ABC 3340 meteorologist Megan Thomas, real great friend of ours. We're gonna bring her on since we got you on too, because I know you hate hot weather just like I do. But let's bring Megan Thomas in. She's gonna give us our forecast for the weekend at Sparta, Kentucky, for the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series, NASCAR Xfinity Series, and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. Everybody's all up there this weekend. Let's bring Megan Thomas in the pit stop. Tennis Plain and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Megan, come on in the house, Woody. How you doing?
I am doing good. How are y'all doing?
Hot. And I'm pretty sure Stephen up there in Richmond, Virginia, he'll tell you he's hot too.
It's been hot up here. Yes, it has. And I've been in the yard all day trying to work on the jungle out there. And wow, I tell you what, I've been trying to beat some of that stuff back. It's been overgrown for quite some time, and I spent all day out there in the beating sun. But, you know, we had a little bit of breeze out here to try and help me out. But it's been hot up here for the last couple of weeks out here, and it's going to stay hot for a while, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's pretty warm out here today, but I got to lay out by the pool. It didn't rain today. It felt great.
Well, go ahead, Megan. I know your time is limited, but you don't get to talk to Stephen too much. I want to let y'all talk. That's my good friend Stephen Wilson, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. What are we looking like this weekend up in Sparta, Kentucky, Megan?
I know that it rained last weekend at the last race, didn't it?
Yes, ma'am, it did, and Stephen stayed up to like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and watched it Sunday night, went into Sunday morning down here at Daytona. I'm too old. I couldn't make it because I had to go to work with Houston Bear Electric Monday. So
I know. It was on NBC, and I'm on ABC, but I felt bad for all the NBC people who had to stay up late and do the newscast. But last week I said I didn't think it was going to be a washout, but, I mean, it did. So it got hit by that one stray thing, you know, that one shower will ruin a race. But if you're headed to the race this weekend, Saturday, if you're going in early, it's chance of thunderstorms between 11 and 4 o'clock. It'll be mostly sunny, high near 89 degrees. It's about a 30% chance, so it'll be a hit or a miss kind of deal. And then that night will be in the 70s. On Sunday, we'll stay mostly sunny, high near 90, and the chance for showers don't arrive till late Sunday night. So it'll be anywhere between, I think, 6 to, you know, 10 o'clock at night. There's a 30% chance for showers and storms. So, again, 30% just means it's a hit or miss kind of deal. I can't pinpoint exactly where it's going to rain. You just know that there is a slight chance for a shower.
That sounds good, Megan. Well, I know your time is limited, like I said earlier. Would you like to give us a forecast here the next few days for Central Alabama here in Talladega and the Birmingham area?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be like it was today for the next several days. I think for the rest of the week, there's not only a 20% chance of showers, which is very small, you know, in the summertime. Excuse me. And then temperatures will be in the 90s, but it's going to be warm.
Okay. I'm sort of getting old, Megan. I think the heat bothers me more. But anyway, Megan, if you want to throw out there where everybody can follow you at on social media, website, whatever thing, at ABC 3340, and you are the official weekend weather lady, which I call Mother Nature at ABC 3340. You're our official weather lady for the pit stop, but you got the floor, sweetie. Go ahead and tell everybody where you can find you on social media.
All right. Well, everybody can follow me on Twitter at MegTom_WX. Feel free, if you're listening and you're going to the race, send me a picture. I'd love to tweet it out. And then on Facebook, you can catch me at Meteorologist Megan Thomas. And those are my two social media platforms. So feel free to follow me. I follow back. And we can be Facebook friends.
That sounds good, Megan. Megan, thank you very much again. I know you got a busy schedule, but be safe, and we'll talk at you next Tuesday. If you don't have nothing going on, Susanna, stay in contact with you. Thank you very much, Megan.
Absolutely. I'll talk to y'all next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Stephen, that was our meteorologist, ABC 3340 over in Birmingham. I know we had talked earlier, and I don't know, you know, we got a lot to talk about, and I'm probably going to get on my soapbox later, so I'll let you know that. I started to text you earlier, and I'm going to get on my soapbox about this safety deal with a NASCAR. But have you seen ARCA sent out this press release from Toledo, Ohio, July 7th today? Matt Wallace, part of the third generation in the family of famous Wallace racers, are scheduled to make his second career ARCA racing series presented by Bernard starting the upcoming Sioux Chief PowerPex 200 at Lucas Oil Raceway Friday, July the 24th. Have you read anything on that?
I did get to read just a little bit about it, but have not got to look too much into it. But, you know, he's been racing up at I-44 Speedway and a lot of other tracks up there in the Midwest over the last couple of years, and late models up there. He's had his dad out there, and The Wallace family has been really instrumental in the last couple of years, really trying to get him back into the series. A couple of years ago, he's been really working himself back throughout the series to try and gain some experience, especially on short tracks. And a player, like I said, at I-44 Speedway, where the Wallace family has just been, you know, so instrumental over the last, you know, several years. You know, his dad, Mike Wallace, Rusty Wallace, a lot of those guys have been out there for so many years running around that racetrack and a lot of the racetracks across the Midwest and running a lot through the ASA series and stuff like that. But, you know, Matt has a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of backing around him with the racing knowledge that is going to be able to come from that family to really give him a lot of knowledge to move him forward throughout the rest of his career out there. Unfortunately, you know, as we always talk to a lot of these drivers, and I always ask this question, I pose this question to a lot of them, that they come through with these names like Wallace's, and you know, you pick a name that is so generational in motorsports in general, not just NASCAR, but in any series. And I always ask them the question, you know, how much does this help and how much does it hurt? And, you know, sometimes they tell you, you know, hey, you know, a lot of guys will come out there and look at you and say, oh, God, here comes such and such, you know, here's the Silver Spoon kid, you know, here's such and such, you know, they won the Sprint Cup or, you know, whatever it may be. But, you know, it's not always easy for these guys, no matter what your name is, you know, Chase Elliott, He had to start off just like everybody else. Nobody just put him in that number 24 car. You know, Rick Hendrick didn't come to him and just say, hey, I'm going to put you in this number 24 car. No, he had to work his way up to that. It's like everybody else. You have to work your way there no matter who your name is. Yeah, you know, it makes it a little bit easier because, you know, Bill Elliott can go to some of these guys and say, you know, I've been working with him ever since he was a little guy. You know, they know him. And it opens a few doors, but you still have to prove yourself no matter what. And, you know, Matt Wallace is a real good racer out there that has won some features out there at I-44 and other tracks around the Midwest that we'll be able to get him to the next level out there. And then the ARCA series is definitely the next step in his progress.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and start with the NASCAR Xfinity Series, Stephen, because we got to come up at the bottom of the hour. We've got a good friend, Woody Kane from the Motor Racing Network. He's going to call in. And then at the top of the hour, we've got Bobby Dodder, owner of SS Greenlight Racing. He's going to call in. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the Xfinity Series. And I have some audio from the media center at Daytona, but I'm not going to play it because I'm going to go ahead and start with this and let you get into the Cup because I'm sure we got a lot to talk about the Cup. But Daytona International Speedway, 14th annual Subway Firecracker 250. Austin Dillon won the 14th annual Subway Firecracker 250. His fifth victory in 90 NASCAR Xfinity Series races. This is his third victory and 10th top 10 finish in 2015. This is his first victory and fifth top 10 finish in six races at Daytona International Speedway. Elliott Sadler finished second, posted his sixth top 10 finish in 13 races at Daytona International Speedway. It is his seventh top 10 finish in 2015. Chase Elliott, you mentioned him earlier, finished third, posted his first top 10 finish in four races at Daytona International Speedway. Harrison Rhodes finished ninth with the highest finishing rookie. Chris Buescher still leads the points, standing by 34 points over Chase Elliott. And I'll let you go on with the Cup side, Stephen, and then we'll play some audio.
Well, NBC, this weekend, the return of NBC after 10 years of ESPN being on the air, they did an exceptional job. But you've got to give them credit. I know a lot of people probably are saying that, and the common complaint was coming into this weekend, why did they have to move it to Sunday, knowing that people had to go to work? Well, you know, nobody knew when they moved it to Sunday that it was going to rain. Unfortunately, nobody can predict the weather. But it happened. So we got underway very, very late at night after 11 o'clock, unfortunately. So by that time, a lot of people had already gone to work, had already gone to bed because they've got to work in the morning, unfortunately. But NBC did make a promise to everybody on the air. They said that they would stay on the air and stay on network television until the checkered flag fell. They would not move that race to another network. And they did. They stayed on air until nearly 3 a.m. in the morning when the checkered flag finally fell at 2:45. So you got to give it to them that they may do with their promise. And NASCAR did everything possible. That's not the first time that we've had a late race there at Daytona. And I know we can get on our soapboxes a lot of times and criticize, condemn, and complain about what NASCAR does, what they don't do, and just in general. But, you know, it is what it is. You take a look at 2005. Unfortunately, we got underway late. Hey, for everybody out there listening, I was sitting in the stands when Tony Stewart took the checkered flag at 2:45 in the morning. So for everybody listening, I hear you. I've been there. I've seen it. I understand. I probably questioned the same thing. Why are we doing this? Why not wait until the next day? But those 50,000 fans that were there, they got to witness Dale Jr. take the checkered flag on Monday morning at nearly 3 a.m. in the morning. I give it to everybody that was there. A round of applause to everybody that stuck it out. The NASCAR fans are probably some of the best fans in the entire world out there. But unfortunately,
sorry, bud. I see an opportunity. Go ahead.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. As I said, round of applause to every NASCAR fan. For everybody sitting at home that did watch it, round of applause to all you guys, too. Dale Jr., your eventual winner at 2:45 in the morning, Monday morning out there. This was his 25th victory in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, his second victory in 2015, and his 11th top 10 finish. This is also his fourth victory and 19th top 10 finish in 32 events at Daytona. Jimmy Johnson was your second place winner out there. Denny Hamlin was third. Matt Benedetto is 26th as your highest finishing rookie. And leading out of there, Kevin Harvick is leading the Sprint Cup Series points by 63 over Dale Earnhardt Jr. by virtue of Martin Truex having a issue earlier on in the event. Now, sure, this is the point where everybody wants to start talking about Austin Dillon and the last lap event that happened out there. Unfortunately, we all know what happened with that. There were some multiple issues in the grandstands. There were some fans that were hurt in the incident. Five different crews jumped the wall and went to the help Austin Dillon Jr. Austin Dillon when his car finally came to rest. The catch fence did its job exactly as it was designed to do. The safer barrier did its job as it was designed to do. That car in the greenhouse and the safety involved in the construction of this new Gen 6 car, everybody at NASCAR R&D, the teams, the manufacturers, and everybody that put these cars together week in, week out, need to be applauded for what they saw in this event and the construction of these cars. You have to give it to them. He was able to get out of that car and walk away.
Steven, since I was going to save my soapbox for later, but you just brought up my soapbox. I want to totally agree with you. I'm gonna take up the NASCAR and all these people on social media, and I'm gonna throw this out there. And if I make anybody mad, this is my opinion. Everybody has one, just like you know what. Just like you said, the catch fence did its job. The car did its job. The front end come off of it. It went to pieces. Everybody's hollering. Well, the car went to pieces. That's what NASCAR designed the damn thing to do. The ass end come off of it, the front end come off of it, the greenhouse stayed intact. And Austin, just like you said, Austin, with nothing but a bruised tailbone and a bruised arm, I don't know what else NASCAR can do. If you don't like it, don't get in the damn car. Don't race. If you don't like it, don't watch it. It is more safer, there goes my redneck talk, it's more safer than it was back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. you have not had a life lost since Dale Sr., bless his heart, lost his life at Daytona back in the day. NASCAR has done a very good job, like you said, in the R&D Center. I want to applaud Mike Helton, Steve O'Donnell, Robin Pendleton, Kerry Tharp, Chrissy King, the whole bunch. I'm throwing it out there. If you don't like it, and I'm tired of seeing everybody throwing all this stuff on Facebook. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you don't like it, don't watch a damn thing.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, at this point, I mean, everybody knows that racing in general. This doesn't matter whether it's NASCAR, drag racing, lawnmower racing. For God's sakes, racing in general is an inherently dangerous sport. No matter what you strap yourself into every weekend, the drivers know it, the fans know it, the media knows it, every crew member that goes across that wall every single weekend, the people in the shop, everybody knows this. There's no point in getting on a soapbox and sitting there as an armchair quarterback on the weekend and saying, well, why this, why that? Everything did its job exactly as it was designed to do. You take a look at the car from 20 years ago. What would have happened to a driver 20 years ago in a wreck like that? They probably wouldn't have gotten out of that car. They would not have gotten out of that car. In fact, they probably wouldn't have gotten out of that car under their own power. But these cars are designed so well and constructed so well between the seats, the greenhouses, and everything in that car. That car is designed with a design to break apart, to lessen the energy impacts to the driver itself. Yes, the motor, the transmission, the rear end, the front end, everything came apart on it, but it's designed to do so. It's designed for a reason, to lessen the energy impact to the driver themselves so that the driver themselves does not get hurt. So for everybody out there that designed the car, works on the car, and builds those cars, from NASCAR to the teams to everybody else out there, a round of applause to everybody out there, including to everybody that built that new catch fence at Daytona.
Amen, Stephen Wilson. I couldn't find my button. And I hated to get on my soapbox, and I apologize for that, but I just had to get it off my chest. I had to take up the NASCAR, and I'm tired of the media dogging NASCAR and some of the drivers. If you don't want to do that, just don't get in the car. Just like my good friend Will Kimmel, he's going to make his first Cup Series start this weekend at Kentucky Speedway. If you don't want to get in that car, Will Kimmel will be glad to get in that car, and he will not complain, especially after that wreck he had at Mobile Speedway. But Steve, I know we're coming up here in the bottom hour, and I had a bunch of interviews from the media center, but let's listen to what President of Daytona International Speedway had to say, Mr. Joe Cheatwood, after that incident there at Daytona International Speedway.
We're joined by the president of the Daytona International Speedway, Joey Chitwood. He's got some brief remarks, and then we'll take a couple of questions. Joey?
Thank you, Andrew. I was proud of the emergency rescue team that responded to the incident after the race. We assessed 13 individuals in the grandstands. 8 declined any medical attention. We had 4 treated on property in our first aid and care centers. We had 1 transported off property to a local hospital. That individual was reported as stable when they were transported off property. I'm really proud of the fact that the fence worked, and the additional safety enhancements of the Daytona Rising Project did its job as well. You know, we'll take this situation, we'll learn from it, we'll analyze it, we'll round up our engineering team and see if there's any additional things that we can learn to get better the next time. We're really proud of the effort of our team and who responded, that the fence worked, and the enhancements of the Daytona Rising Project worked as well.
Any questions? We'll go with George first. And
yeah, Joey, George Diaz with the Orlando Sentinel. Was that the same area where Kyle's car went flying? And also, please, if you can get into a little bit of detail about what exactly, specifically, the enhancements were.
I do not believe that's the same area that Kyle. I don't believe so, and I'm not really sure that's the incident that you're talking about. Obviously, the enhancements with the Rising Project included the location of the grandstands, the fencing, no longer having individuals on Rim Road. And so with the fence and the Daytona Rising Project, it did its job tonight. We're very proud of that.
Lee Spencer, Motorsport.com. Was that Section 163?
I don't have the section, Lee. It's the section right past start-finish line, a couple hundred yards. We we can find that section number for you.
And moving forward with the Daytona Rising project, will the grandstands be elevated to a point where if cars and such, you know, do hit the fence like that, that, you know, the fan safety won't, you know, come into play?
You know, obviously through the last couple of years, we've learned a lot, whether it's fencing or the facility itself in terms of enhancements. One of the elements of the project of Daytona Rising was no longer having fans or individuals on Rim Road and closing off the grandstands on the front row. So those were in the new sections, and that's what was in place today, and I think it did a very good job.
Back to Godwin.
Godwin Kelly, the News Journal. Joey, at this point, do you get with NASCAR to talk about fence heights and strengths, and do you dissect this accident and kind of break it down to see if this was like a super close call or if this, you know, turned out the way you guys expected?
You know, absolutely. We'll work closely with NASCAR. We did this after the last incident. We're going to learn from it, see what else we can do to be better. I think that you saw some of the improvements work today, and so what we can learn from that tomorrow, the next days, we're going to incorporate moving forward. It's very important. Safety is always going to be at the forefront, whether it's the competitor, whether it's the fan. We want to make sure we've got a safe environment to put on some great racing. So we'll learn from this and get better even the next time.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Joey, can you say or if there were any type of debris or what anything went on the other side of the fence toward the stands? Obviously, like in the Kyle Larson incident a couple of years ago, there was some large parts or parts of the car that penetrated or got on the other side. Did anything like that happen in this case?
Well, really, I can only talk about the incident with the fans and the fact that we only had 13 assessed and a number of them declined. Only 4 were treated on site and 1 off property. So I think that just shows you the fence kept everything where it was supposed to be, and the other enhancements of Daytona Rising kept the fans safe. So I think we're really pleased with that. But again, we're going to figure out what else we can learn from this and what we can do to be better prepared next time.
Thank you, Joey.
Stephen, that was Joey Chitwood, President of Daytona International Speedway. But at the time, we got our bottom of the hour guest from the Motor Racing Network, my good friend, Mr. Woody Kane. Let's bring Woody in pit stop. James Payne and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Woody, how you doing tonight? I apologize for that, man. Stephen, this is a little bit of media center interviews from down here in Daytona. How you doing, bud?
Good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And I want to thank you for taking time out to call in tonight. And, my first question, I want to ask you, you know, what we had talked about, and then I'm going to throw you over to Stephen. What did it actually take for MRN, the Motor Racing Network, to actually set up for a race, in a super speedway for Daytona or Talladega, the bigger tracks versus the smaller tracks? How much work actually goes into it?
Well, it's quite a bit. I mean, The engineers and the truck will get there, you know, a day or two before the rest of the crew does, and the office staff will get there, you know, the next day, and a lot of the on-air talent and stuff will come in, and, you know, through that next day along the way. But there's a lot of things involved to get the truck set up, to make sure that all the fiber optics work between the booth and the truck, and make sure that all of our signals for our headsets and the turn guys are all working, and so there's a smaller crew, the engineering staff, that'll go in to make sure all that's working ahead of time. By the time we hit the ground, all that should be up and running, and we're ready to go. But it's quite the undertaking to see it. I wish we could do like a time lapse photography thing on it to show folks how it goes, because it's more than just rolling a truck in and plugging it into one little slot and you're good to go. There's a lot of moving parts and pieces. I mean, we can have as many as, let's see, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we could have as many as 10, 12 people on the air at one time, and to make sure all that works and we've got enough clear space. You know, think of all the radio traffic and the TV traffic and all that stuff that's going on at the track to make sure you've got clear signals to everybody that needs to be on the air. The engineers work frantically to try and make sure all that goes, and invariably, as you know, when things are set up like that, something's going to go wrong, and you have to fix it on the fly as we go. And it could be just a variety of issues along the way, and they do a great job to, A, get us all there, and, B, to make sure it's all working by the time we get ready to go on the air.
Yeah, and y'all do a fantastic job. I'm going to throw you over to Steve.
Thanks.
Well, my question is, at Daytona, looking back at that, is that you take a rain delay that happened at Daytona, and obviously you guys will go down into the pits and interview drivers and crew chiefs and individuals down there for a little while, and then you'll cut away from your coverage and then come back and get an update throughout the rain delay until you get going out there. But how do you guys kind of mitigate those types of things and the changing of your coverage as you go through, knowing that as it gets later in the day or later in the night, that inevitably things are going to have to change? And how did you personally work with the other announcers on air to kind of formulate a plan on how you're going to change your coverage throughout the day as the rain delays, not only at just a particular like Daytona, but in general at any racetrack?
Well, I mean, we're like everybody else. We keep an eye on the radar and what's going on with the weather as we go, and kind of know we might have this happen or that happen, and NASCAR adjusts their plans along the way. If there's rain, for example, they might move driver intros up in the schedule to make sure that we get that out of the way and can get on the track and at least try and get the halfway or as good as much of the race in before the weather comes in. So we're all in touch with each other along the way as that goes on, and we kind of know what to expect. I've been producing the pre-race show. When you get a rain delay and suddenly you've got 10 minutes less or 20 minutes more in your pre-race show, and you may or may not have enough stuff to fill with that, and that's where the interviews come in, and that's where the pit guys really jump in and work hard. They chase guys down in the rain and get them under an umbrella or get them under an overhang somewhere where they can talk for a minute to give the fans an idea of what they're thinking, what they're going through at the time. But the key is we have a back channel, and if you have a scanner in the stands, you can hear what we're talking about and planning while that goes on to figure out, okay, I see this guy, I'll go get him, you go get that guy, and all behind the scenes that's being coordinated so that when it comes on the air it sounds clean and seamless. It doesn't always quite go as cleanly as we might like, but we're working behind the scenes and staying in touch with each other the whole time to know who's going to do what and where each part's going to be and what the next element is in the show, so everybody is on the same page, so you don't have people jumping on top of each other or talking when another one's going to talk and that type of thing. It's just an intricate dance that kind of goes on behind the scenes so that what comes on the air is as clean as we can make it.
Yeah, and Woody, as you know, I was fortunate enough to actually broadcast or be a pit reporter for Thunder 92.7 here in Talladega back in the spring. You know, you and I had talked, and you gave me a few pointers, and that was my first time ever. And I understand how, I mean, it can get a lot of traffic, and I was give out running up and down pit road there, and but there's so much that goes on. And, you know, like you mentioned, Grady South there with Thunder 92.7 and Rufus T. Rags there, you know, they're talking in the back of my ear, you know, when we actually got to cover the ARCA race. And that was pretty awesome. And I sort of really got into it, but I definitely understand just how much actually goes into it. Because I mean, you know, you got somebody talking in the back of your ear, you know, go here, go there, go there. I mean, it could get real tricky.
Well, one of the good things about it is we have, in addition to a back channel that goes to the booth where we can talk to each other, what would essentially be on the air during commercial breaks and kind of plot things out. We also have a two-way radio so that we can talk to each other while we're on the air live. So the key with that is you have your two-way radio, and say, for example, I'm on pit road and Alex Hayden or Winston Kelly or Steve Post is out there. Don't talk when they're talking, because that's very distracting when you're trying to form words and talk and somebody's in your ear. You talk when the driver is giving an answer while they're naturally listening anyway. You know, it's just little tricks like that that go a long way in helping to make sure it's smooth. But it's pretty hectic. And, you know, as we talked about before you did that race, the key to me anyway of working pit road is to try and find out as you go along from the teams what they're going to do when they stop, what the car is doing. Is it loose? Is it tight? Are they going to make an adjustment? What's the driver saying about the car? So you have a really good idea by the time they get to pit road what they're going to do, because if you get a good spot where you can see up and down pit road, you're going to have to look right and left the whole time. And if you're looking right, something may happen to your left. So if you know what they're trying to do to the car and you know they've come in, you can relay that information as you go. And it's as seamless as if you were only looking at that one car by knowing what's ahead and what they're thinking and what they've been saying about the car beforehand, so that when it actually happens, you're already set with it.
Exactly, Woody. Steve?
Yeah, well, talk a little bit about how you actually got into this, because a lot of people start into this by being an announcer at a local track or just a local radio station, and some people just a natural progression of being a local on-air DJ. There's so many different avenues into getting into calling races, but it's such an intricate sport. To be able to, as you just said, to cover these things and be able to talk on air while listening to somebody else, and there's so many things going on at so many different times, and sometimes all at the same time, and you've got to paint the picture to the person at home that may not be watching their TV. They're driving down the road. They're sitting at work. They're doing something else, and you've got to paint that picture to them at home.
Yeah, that's one of the phrases we use a lot, paint the picture. You have to do that. Keep in mind that your audience on radio can't see like the people at home on TV can. And we hear a lot of times from people who watch TV and turn the sound down and turn us up because they want to hear what we're doing. At the same time, they can still take advantage of being able to see the pictures. But starting out for me, I was a print reporter in Kannapolis coming out of college, and then moved into local radio there in Concord and Albemarle, and started doing ball games and got into some local cable and doing, you know, high school football and basketball. And then we started doing short track racing at Concord Motorsport Park. It's Concord Speedway now, a half-mile track here in the Charlotte area. And that eventually led me to MRN from doing those races and working with some different people. Steve Post and I used to do a lot of those races. Doug Rice used to do some with us from time to time. And, you know, you just kind of get to know people that way. And we would do cable TV shows back in the day when you could, before the huge TV contracts, you could go and shoot at anything that moved out there and put your own shows together and do what you wanted. That's a different animal now than what it was. But it's like you said, you start off with the smaller things and get your experience and get your chops down, and you get to the point eventually where when you get to a national network like the Motor Racing Network, where you've seen a lot of different things and you don't get disturbed or rattled by things that might happen because you've already done that, maybe not in that particular sport, but you've seen enough things to where you know you just have to keep moving on with the show. The worst thing you can do is freeze and get paralyzed and let those things run you off in the ditch, and then it's hard to get back on track. If you just keep moving forward, keep the goals and objectives in mind, and remember that you're just trying to relay information to people along the way instead of, you know, just like Tim and I talked about, don't try to be a broadcaster. Just be yourself. And that's what people want to hear. They want to hear reality. They want to hear what's going on. They don't care necessarily so much about the slick and the polish. I know, you know, that's a big thing in terms of national broadcasting. You have to have a certain amount of quality to what you're doing, but you don't want to worry about so much that as you do. Just be yourself and just describe what you see, and everything then will come out all right.
Yep, and throw you back over to Tim here.
And, Woody, I know your time is limited, but when I met you a couple of years ago, I want to thank you for taking me under your wing. You really helped me out a lot. But can you talk a little bit about the new MRN studio, the new truck that you took me for a tour through? I mean, that is an awesome thing. But can you sort of, a lot of our listeners, as far as NASCAR fans also, they don't really get the inside the track perspective is what y'all do. Can you give them a little bit of sort of touch on exactly how the new trailer works with all that new stuff?
Well, basically it's a combination of a radio station and a motor coach like you might take on vacation on wheels, except it doesn't have sleeping quarters. It's got slide outs like you might see in an RV that give us some office space and some space for some edit suites. We've got in the new truck really three edit suites essentially and an auxiliary studio. You might have on a particular race day Dave Moody up in the what we call the bridge, which is where the main control room is and a big studio is, big, I say big for a truck. It's got three seats in it. Doing a show up there. Well, now with this new truck, simultaneously, we can have people in a lower studio in the main midsection of the truck doing another show or coming out of there at the same time, whereas before we only had the one option. We've got big office space in there where you can get to the side if you need to interview somebody or talk to somebody or plan things while all the other activity is going on. And this truck has so much more workspace along the way and all of the spots for all of our guys. You know, we may have 15 people in the truck working at one time, and all of them have connectivity with, internet and that type of thing. Bathroom, of course. There's a kitchen and an engineering area. They're kind of combined up in the back area of the truck. It's very compact, very tight, and at the same time, it has a lot of room to be able to get stuff done. A lot of the times, the problem is finding a place to spread out and get all your stuff done, you know. Have a place where you can set your laptop up and edit some audio or sit down and write a show or write a commercial spot or anything like that along the way. It's got a lot of space, even though it's just a truck, but with the slide-outs and all the technology it's got on it, it really is like a radio station on wheels, complete with engineering and office space and studios and everything you might need. It can do what most radio stations can do within the confines of that truck.
It is very awesome, dude. It is very awesome. And, Stephen, do you have anything else for you? The phone lines have lit up. Stephen, do you have anything else for you came from MRM?
Yeah, I got one last question for him. Is many, many years ago, and what a lot of people may not understand is that many years ago when Winston was in the sport is that they said that they didn't want PRN to cover the All-Star race. They wanted MRN as part of the contracts to do the All-Star race. And another part of it is that MRN is the only one that covers the Truck Series races. So when they go to a track that would normally be covered on PRN, which is part of the SMI networks, you guys will cover the Truck Series races, which is kind of a unique situation that you guys will have to now work with at somebody else's facility. How do you guys work with PRN, not only on those types of atmospheres where you're working at their facilities on a Truck Series race or during the broadcast of the All-Star Series, but when you're not working on those events, I know there's probably some collaboration between the two networks that go on. How do you two networks work together on various events that go on throughout the season?
Yeah, the coming together of all those deals about who does what, when, and where was before my time here at MRN, but we do all the truck races. Like, for example, this week we'll be at Kentucky Speedway, which is an SMI track. However, we will do the truck race Thursday night, and then PRN will do the Xfinity Series and the Sprint Cup Series Saturday and Sunday nights there. So we may have to share a booth along the way, but we won't be using them at the same time. And a lot of times the tracks can accommodate two different booths, so their guys can set up their stuff and our guys can set up our stuff, and we won't cross paths along the way. Occasionally, we may have to share the same space, but we're not broadcasting on the same nights. Like, for example, at a basketball game, you may see a national network like an ESPN and the local radio covering, and they're going on simultaneously. We don't do that when we're at a track with PRN, or same as when they're at a track with us. We don't do that. What a lot of people don't know is we all get along very well. We all work well with each other and know all those guys and like them all very much, and they do a great job, and we have a really good relationship along the way. And a lot of times we'll collaborate on, you know, news audio or things like that if we need to along the way, and sharing information if we need to. And, you know, we'll get letters from people or emails saying, hey, how come y'all did this? And we'll say, no, that was actually PRN, and vice versa. Or we'll say, you know, don't forget next week we won't be on the air. PRN will have the races, and they'll do the same for us. So there is a whole lot of collaboration along the way, and we all get along very well. I think people might be surprised to know how well we all get along and how much we actually collaborate and work together by necessity when we're at the same facility on the same weekend.
Woody, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'm going to let Tim have the last thoughts, and appreciate you taking the time. Good luck with the Truck Series race this weekend. I will be at Darlington and then the next week at Richmond, so I'll try and get with you guys. I'd love to take a tour of the MRN studios there. I've never even gotten a chance to take a look at your new digs that you guys got going on.
Yeah, come check it out. I don't think I'll be at Darlington, but you said Richmond. I'll be at Richmond. I think I'll be producing the pre-race at Richmond, so come see us.
All right, I will. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks, Steve. And Woody, I have the phone lines have lit up. I've got one of our big supporters from upstate New York. His home track is Todd Bigsby. Do you have time to take one caller?
Sure.
Okay. We want to bring Todd Bigsby into the pit stop. The team is playing Stephen Wilson and Woody King.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Todd, how you doing tonight, my friend? You're in the pit stop. We've got Mr. Woody King from MRN. He's agreed to take one caller, and I've picked you. What you got, bud? Todd, are you there, son? Well, Woody, I'm sorry. I don't know what
That's
happened.
That's all right. It happened.
Anyway, yeah, I know. Especially in the radio, just like you told me. Just sort of go on with it. But, Woody, thanks again, bud. If you want to throw out there where everybody can follow you at on social media, and I'll let you get the floor, bud. You go ahead.
My Twitter is at WYCain, C-A-I-N, and for all the other guys, you'll see them being retweeted as at MRN Radio. So we like to have a lot of fun on social media and encourage folks to play around with us. It's a lot of fun.
Woody, thanks again. And just like Stephen said, I know Stephen's going to Richmond. Suzanne and I, we're going to go to Darlington. He said you were not going to be there, so I'll aggravate Tharp and all that bunch and poaching them. Are you going to be at Talladega this fall?
I believe that I will. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I believe I am on that one again.
Okay. Well, whenever we see you, we're going to get one of them big giant meatballs that we had this past time, and we're going to dump it on Posty's head. What do you think?
All right. That sounds really good.
All right, Woody. Thanks again, bud. Be safe, and thank you for everything that you and MRN and Steve Post, Alex Hayden, and Kyle Rickey and all y'all do. We appreciate everything y'all do, bud.
You bet. We'll talk to you later.
All right, 10-4, see you, Woody.
Bye.
All right, that was Woody King. All right, Steve, we're coming up on top of the hour here, waiting on our top of the hour guest, Mr. Bobby Docker, on the SS Green Light Racing. And that was Woody King. Woody really helped me with my first coverage of the ARCA race there at Talladega. I mean, I was scared to death. But we was talking a little bit about Austin Dillon. Everything that went on, I played, you know, Joey Chitwood stuff, and I got on my soapbox earlier. I sort of got a little carried away. I apologize for that, but I seen earlier, and I don't know if you've seen it. I don't got where it come from, but it was a post. I don't know if it was reliable or not, but a few of the fans at Daytona have already got a log to, I'm suspecting, to sue Daytona International Speedway for what happened. I mean, Steven, it's on the back of the ticket. You buy that ticket to go in there, you know, just like we do whenever we sign our credentials. You and Anne-Marie, Suzanne and I, when we sign that credential to go in there, if something happened to us, we released reliability. I mean, it's all on us.
Yeah, actually, yes, yeah, so there has been a couple of fans that were in the grandstands that were hurt out of the 13 that Joey did speak about in the media center, have hired the Morgan Law Firm out of Central Florida that took the case on just a couple of years ago with the Kyle Larson incident where the tire ended up in the grandstands, and he represented, I believe there was about 7 or 8 in that case, and he has taken on, I believe, 2 or 3 of the fans out of the 13 at this point that was made known earlier today in a, I believe it was an interview with ESPN that they say that they have come forward, well, he has come forward as their legal advisor. But you're right. On the back of the ticket, it does particularly state that as you come through the gate, you know the risks, the inherent risk that something potential could happen. Just as we do when we sign our credentials each and every weekend, that we know something could happen. However, I will say this, is that in all these incidents that have happened out there and in the incidents that have happened in the past, NASCAR, the tracks, the owners have always been very forthcoming in the fact of helping the fans out, getting the medical attention they need, whether it be on site, whether it be a local hospital, or whether it be a local facility, whatever the needs are of the fans. They're not just about you walking through the gates and, you know, oh, well, you got hurt, tough luck, go home, sorry, too bad. They're not heartless. They're not some heartless, you know, corporation sanctioning body that just, well, it happens, goodbye kind of thing. No, they've been very good about that. You know, Joey Chitwood talked about how they were on the scene. Several of them did decline. Several of them did go to the on-site facility. One was taken off-site. You know, Daytona, these tracks, they have to carry a certain amount of limited liability insurance. Were something to happen, such as this incident or another incident that is out of their control, that is what these things are for. Just, you know, I'm not a legal expert by no means, so don't take anything I'm saying as legal advice at all. But NASCAR, the tracks, have to put this on the back of their tickets. But in no means do what they put on the back of that ticket means that they're going to just throw their hands up in the air and walk away and say, too bad, because that's not what they do. They have been very good in the past of not only in the Kyle Larson case, but I'm sure in this case, and in many other instances that have happened at racetracks, and in many incidences that we don't even know about that have happened from people simply slipping and falling, you know, whatever the case may be. These tracks have always done whatever they could by the fans. I don't know what might be going on, what the premise is behind these fans coming forth, whether they think they're going to, I don't know. I'm not going to get into the semantics of it all. I'm not going to throw any allegations around on what they're thinking. But, you know, in the end of the day, the track and NASCAR and everybody are going to at least try and do what they can to do right by the fans that were injured in the incident, and make sure that they are medically taken care of, because it's right for them. No fan should, you know, you go to a Major League Baseball game here just a couple weeks ago where a bat, I believe it was Washington Nationals, or don't quote me on that, but just a couple weeks ago, fan got hurt. You know, bat went up into the stands. They got the local EMTs, took them to the hospital. I believe that, you know, they helped them out and got that taken care of. You know, they're not just going to, you know, just leave you high and dry. But, you know, whatever happens, you know, I don't know what's going through these people's minds, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with everything you said, Steve. Just like you said, we're going to hell in a handbasket. And just to touch on a little bit about what you said, I can't remember when it was, back in the day here at Talladega, you know, Talladega Super Speedway is a little bit closer to Lincoln, Alabama, which is where I grew up. And then, you know, I live in Talladega, which I met Suzanne. We moved to Talladega, which is called Talladega Super Speedway. But I can't remember when it was, and I don't want nobody to quote me on it, because Lincoln City was trying to annex Talladega Super Speedway into the city limits where they could get taxes, you know, because Talladega Super Speedway is in the county now. And I remember a phrase, I don't know if it was Bill France Sr., Bill France Jr., whoever, but whichever one said it, he said, if y'all annex Talladega Super Speedway into the city limits of Lincoln, he said, I'll plug the north tunnel, I'll plug the south tunnel, I'll fill it up with water and put catfish in it. And by God, he meant it.
Well, you know, the funny story about, you know, you talking about Talladega Talladega Speedway is that, well, most people don't know about Talladega Speedway. It was never even meant to be built in Talladega in the first place. It was actually meant to be built in North Carolina. But the funny thing is that the locality in North Carolina that it was actually just supposed to be built into had a blue law where they said, absolutely, you will not run a race on Sunday afternoon because we have a blue law here. We shut everything down. We roll the sidewalks up. That's it. You're not going to do it. So Bill France Sr. and Enoch Staley said, I got you. So what they did, they came to Talladega, and the rest is history. Most people don't know that story, but it's actually a pretty interesting story to hear it. I actually got to hear that story from Mike Staley, which is Enoch's son. Never had heard that story before, but Mike told me that story one time, long time ago. It's pretty interesting. It was supposed to be built. The original site was actually supposed to be built in Hillsboro, North Carolina. Bill France Sr. and Enoch had already planned it out. 2.66 miles, same design, same everything. They were going to build it up there in the northeast part of North Carolina. Till the locals got a hold of it and said, nope, sorry, you're not running races here on Sunday. And that's when he come to Alabama and built that big monster you guys got down there.
I'm glad, Enoch, you know, which I used to work for Enoch Staley back in the early 80s. I'm glad you brought it up. And I did know that story, Steve. I know you tried to get one on me, but as we wait for our top of the hour guest, let's listen to what Austin Dillon had to say in the media center at Daytona International Speedway after the Cup 0400.
Yeah, I mean, coming to the checkered there and thought we had a pretty good run and going with Jeff, and I think Denny said the four got turned him and went out after that. It was just crazy. You know, it's just part of this race. Everybody's pushing for all they can, you know, pushing a tight pack. I was pushing the 24. The people behind me is pushing. It's just a wad right there at the end, and that's why these speedway races end, and you're just praying and hoping that you get through it at the end. And we're unfortunate, but fortunate in the fact that good Lord was looking after and kept me safe. I'm praying for all the fans out there. Hope everybody's okay in the stands. The safety that NASCAR's done for the race car is obviously pretty awesome. I got a bruised tailbone and a little bit of bruise in my forearm, but everything else feels fine. I don't have a headache or anything like that, but ice up and go get ready for Kentucky. You know, I thought the wreck was over, and I was sliding on the roof, and I just finally like, okay, we made it. And then it was a big bang. I think it was the two car ran into me. And then I thought I just got done stopping, and I had crew members everywhere. I thought that was really special and cool. It comforted me pretty quick, and then I just wanted to get out of there and then let the fans know I was okay, let my parents and my grandparents know that I was all right.
How scary was that?
I mean, it happened so quick. Man, you're just holding on and praying it get through it, get the race again.
Did you look at it?
I got a little look on the ambulance on the way back, but I heard it's pretty vicious, so I'll look at it at some point.
You don't seem very shaken.
I mean, this is what we do. We sign up for this every weekend. I'll be ready to go to Kentucky, and I'll be fine. I'm, like I said, I don't feel if anything hurt any worse than what it did, I think I'd be more shaken, but right now, adrenaline's still pumping, and I feel fine. I feel like I can go race. Well, it's not really acceptable, I don't think. I mean, we've got to figure out something. I think our speeds are too high. I really do. I think everybody can get good racing with lower speeds, and we can work on that and then figure out a way to keep cars on the ground. That's the next thing. So we're fighting hard to make the racing good. I hope fans enjoy all that. We don't, but, you know, it's what you put your – that's your job. You go out there and you hold it wide open to the end, checkers record, and hope you make it through. Yeah, I mean, it's very vicious. I mean, it's switching around in there, and, you know, the belts are loosening each hit, so the hits are getting more and more violent. By the fourth one, you know, you've separated enough where your fourth one's going to hurt more than others. But like I said, I held on the steering wheel as hard as I could, and I'm sure I'm going to find more bumps and bruises by the end of the week, but right now I feel all right. I had already actually relaxed when the two had hit me, because all I can see is the roof and the windshield, and glad we build safe cars at RCR and NASCAR. Brad was in there with me, and he said, man, I was trying to slow down, but I must have hit oil or something, and he said, I KO'd you. That was my bad. But I looked at it for a second, and it was demolished, and I just waved at the fans, and they were pushing me to the ambulance, and I walked over there to it. No, I really don't know. After I saw the 11 spinning, I think somebody hooked me. I don't recall. I think I got hooked across the whole field, but I don't know who it was. I mean, it's a water. And my focus was pushing the 24 to the end, trying to make him get to the lead, but it didn't work out.
Stephen, I know I've already been on top of my soapbox, and I know you have too, and we've already talked about this. That was Austin Dillon after his wreck here at Daytona International Speedway. There was mention back, I think we might have our other guest coming on, Stephen, so I'll make this short. There was mention NASCAR has pulled the hard cards of the team members that went out to assist Austin Dillon, and which they're not going to find them. I know you've already seen it also. But do you think NASCAR did the right? I don't know why they pulled the hard card, Steve.
I have not heard about the hard cards being pulled. I had only heard about the penalties not being issued to the teams for going to assist Austin Dillon. I know that the photos that I did see, there was five different crews. There was Casey Kane's crew. There was Casey Mears' crew, there was Dale Jr.'s crew, and I could not make out the other two crews that were on the other side of the car, but there did look like there were at least two other crews out there to help. So I can't speak to why the hard cars were pulled. So if they were, I had not heard that as of yet.
Okay, well, I had heard it when I was coming home, Stephen. I don't want to call out nobody's name, but I was listening to the right before 5. I left a little bit earlier coming home to load everything in the studio. I'm not going to mention who it was, but I had heard it on the normal radio, not my SiriusXM. But, Stephen, something must have happened to Bobby Dotter. He hadn't called. Let me go ahead and start right here. The weekend of events here at Kentucky, not here, this time, up there at Kentucky Speedway, the Camp Lord Truck Series NO 255 will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. MRN has your radio, Fox Sports 1 has your TV, and that was Thursday, I'm sorry, and on Friday, the 10th, Xfinity Series Kentucky 300, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. PRN has your radio, NBCSN has your TV, and Saturday night, my good friend Will Kimmel is going to make his first NASCAR Sprint Cup Series start. And I hate to be biased, Stephen, I'm sorry, but I love my boy Will. Sprint Cup Series, Frucker State 400, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. PRN has your radio. NBCSN has your TV. Stephen, any last thoughts before we jump out of here, bud?
Sorry. I was actually looking at this about the hard cards. Just to comment back on that is, I probably should have looked into that a little bit earlier. Yes, NASCAR did pull the hard cards. Steve O'Donnell did say that on SiriusXM that nobody will be penalized. However, the hard cards will be reissued back to the members without any types of penalties. They just want to have a conversation with each of the members to let them know that, you know, even though that their help was much appreciated, they just want to let them know that, you know, it is a safety problem, that you can't just rush the wall and, you know, on an active track to, you know, no matter what, that there are safety personnel out there and officials that, you know, that's their job to go help. And even though that, you know, whether I agree with that statement or not, that's nor here nor there. You know, I have to agree that, you know, it was an active track, but, in a situation like that, I think the members that did jump the wall to go and help Austin Dillon in that incident, I have to agree that NASCAR are not fining or penalizing or anything in this incident. I think these guys should be commended no matter what. NASCAR has done the right thing by not penalizing them.
Exactly. And, Stephen, I will speak for you, too, also. If you and I were standing down there and that did happen and we had the opportunity to go help, we'd probably get in trouble, but I would probably do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean that's human nature at that point is to go out there and react. I mean, you can't, you know, when seconds count, you've got to do something, you know. You've got to get out there. You've got to do something. So, sorry about that. I diverted the conversation just a little bit on that. But, anyways, back to Kentucky this weekend.
But, no, you're fine, bud. Thank you for looking that up because, you know, I didn't have time. I didn't know if you had looked it up. I've already read the schedule, All Times Eastern. This is going to be Thursday. The 9th, the Campbell World Truck Series, you know, 225 at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. MRN has your radio with our good friend Woody Kane, and Fox Sports 1 has your TV. On Friday, the Xfinity Series, Kentucky 300 at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. PRN has your radio, NBC, SN has your TV. And Saturday, like I said earlier, I don't know if you heard me, my good friend, I'm being a little bit biased, my good friend Will Kimmel is going to make his first NASCAR Xfinity Series start. Sprint Cup Series, Quaker State 400, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. PRN has your radio. NBC, SN has your TV. Stephen, any last thoughts?
I don't. Hopefully we've got a good weekend out there. One last thought that I do have, NASCAR is conducting a test out there this weekend, tomorrow actually, at Kentucky Speedway, for some changes that they are looking for the race packages later on this year and potentially for 2016. There's also been a couple of changes that are going to take effect later this year at Michigan, Richmond, Darlington, and a couple other racetracks. They are changing the spoilers, the radiators, and a couple other parts on the race cars to create a little bit better racing product out there on the racetrack. NASCAR has said that, you know, there is a few issues with the race car, and they have acknowledged that, but, you know, they've listened to the fans, they've listened to the drivers, and they are making the changes. So they are going to go with a new spoiler. They are going to go with there's going to be a little bit difference in the splitter too at a couple of these racetracks, as well as they are changing a little bit with the radiator and a couple other parts on the car, excuse me, they're going to change the drag on the car to optimize what, to quote them, to optimize the racing product. So look for those changes in the next couple of races that we're going to see through in the late part of the summer and coming into the fall at some of these events.
Stephen, thank you very much for bringing that up about the road changes. I forgot all about that. Yeah, thank you, bud. But throw out there, where everybody can follow you at on social media. I think you got the floor.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and follow us on the web, SpeedwayDigest.com, where we post all of our articles, fantasy, everything from NASCAR to drag racing, to you name it. We've got everything out there for you guys.
Stephen, you do an awesome job, and thank you very much for being a co-host with me. Tell AM and the boys we said hello, and y'all have a great night, and good night from Talladega, Alabama.
I ain't rich, but I damn sure wanna be. Working like a dog all day ain't working for me. I wish I had a rich uncle that'd kick the bucket and I was sitting on a pile like Warren Buffett. I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat. It can buy me a truck to pull it.
Yeah, you can buy me a boat.